Hussein. He is the Messiah. He walks on water and puts his pants on two legs at a time because he's better than you. Welcome to 2013. It is the beginning of the fifth year of our Lord, Hussein Obama. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, whatever the fuck you want to do. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. You can shove your opinion up your ass, that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. And don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. Yes, and the crowd goes wild, the way they always do. This is what it's like to be a celebrity. Every time I go out in public, people start cheering. Women rip their clothes off and throw underwear at me. People throw $100 bills. Why? Because I am the great one himself. And this is Stating the Obvious, the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect. The stupidity-seeking cruise missile that homes in on and destroys statists all around the world. All over the place. And if any statists survive the nuclear explosion, then we mow them down with the M60 machine gun. Alright, this is Stating the Obvious, brought to you by the Cynical Libertarian Society, and I am the great one himself. We're on the internet at cynlibsoc.com, cynicallibertariansociety.com. You can send us email if you want to do so at God, that's God, dog spelled backwards, God, at cynlibsoc.com. In the control room is the lovely and adorable Randy. Today is the 3rd of January, 2013, the beginning of the fifth year of our Lord, Hussein Obama. We did not all die in the Mayan Holocaust last year like we were supposed to. No, there are a lot of disappointed hippies and weirdos and freaks out there. So, hippies, weirdos, and freaks, let's talk about stuff. Let's talk about non-political stuff to start off with. Does anybody out there, because I need to get all this in before I forget about it and start getting irate about the state. Irate about the state. Does anybody out there listen to Diana Krall? I'm a big fan of hers. Like her stuff. I've got a number of her albums. I saw she had a new one out. Got it from the library because I don't actually buy CDs anymore. I also don't download them off iTunes. I just get them through the library and listen to them and go, yeah, that's good or that's not good. And then I can actually make choices. Anyhow, went and got the new Diana Krall album from the library. It's called Glad Rag Doll, and I'm assuming her album sales must be going down, because in the past all her album covers have had her on the front, like probably with a piano, looking really classy and hot and shit like that. And on this one, she's on the cover, there's no piano, there's no musical instruments whatsoever, and she's wearing like black lingerie and black nylon stockings, and she's looking hot but slutty, as opposed to before, where she looked hot but classy. And at first I thought, well, this is the wrong CD. This is a Britney Spears CD. So anyhow, just saying, Diana, I mean, I understand your album sales must be going down because, you know, the people today are listening to really classy music like dubstep and shit like that. You know, put some clothes on and fucking get your self-respect back, honey. You don't need to tart yourself up to sell albums. And if you do, you really shouldn't be trying to appeal to those kind of people. That's just my opinion. You know, and let's be honest, Diana Krall sells a lot more albums than I do. So my opinion on this probably doesn't fucking mean much, but it's still my opinion. Speaking of opinions, let's talk about the movie Prometheus. Now, I am a huge fan of Ridley Scott, Alien and Blade Runner. Two of the greatest movies ever fucking made. Ever. Ever. Blade Runner, you gotta watch the director's cut, though. The one that doesn't have that fucking stupid narrative overlay on it. Anyhow. So, I remember back when Prometheus was coming out, I was all excited. And I was telling this guy I know who owns an independent movie theater about how excited I was. You know, Prometheus, oh my god, it's Ridley Scott, Alien prequel, it's going to be so awesome. And he says, you know the movie's going to suck, don't you? I'm like, no, man, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. He's like, no, it's really going to suck. Trust me. I'm like, no, man, it's going to be a great movie. It's Ridley Scott. It's an Alien prequel. We're going to find out what happened. You know, it's like having orgasms like you people do when you see Obama on TV and you go, oh, Obama, you're going to give me free healthcare. Right? You know, like I was doing that because that's what gives me orgasms is Ridley Scott movies. And he's like, no, dude, it's going to fucking suck. Trust me. Well, I finally saw Prometheus, thanks to Netflix. And guess what? It sucked. Oh, my God. I mean, it looked great. It looked pretty fantastic. There were a lot of nods to Alien, and it had the whole Ridley Scott look to it. So, I mean, visually, it was great. The plot, such as it was terrible, and it was just, you know, oh, look at all the soap opera stuff, oh, these people are related to each other, oh, gee, there's a shock, oh, the aliens look just like humans, oh, wow, that was creative, you know, it's just like, oh, look, there's an alien life form, I'm a scientist, let me touch it, and just, like, the part where the geologist, like, freaks out and goes, man, I ain't looking at no dead bodies, I'm gonna walk away, it's like, why? There was no motivation for that at all. You could tell it was completely contrived, just to give in the plot a reason for the two scientists to become separated from the rest of the party so that they could get trapped in the alien complex overnight, you know, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's just like, oh my God, it was just fucking terrible. The fucking plot was fucking terrible. The character, I had like no sympathy for any of the only character I had sympathy for was, of course, the Charlene, whatever, however you pronounce her name, Theron, who, you know who I'm talking about, the hot chick, the hot chick who wore the skin-tight outfit, and the only reason I had sympathy for her was because she's a hot chick wearing a skin-tight outfit. The main character, who is supposed to be the Ripley character in this one, I had no fucking sympathy for her. I really wanted her to just die so she would shut up, because, God, she was annoying. You know, it's like, in Alien, I liked all the characters, even Ash. I mean, because they were real, they felt like real people. And I totally sympathized with Ripley because she is a great character. She was believable. You know, I mean, everything Sigourney Weaver did to make Ripley come to life, you know, and all the writing that went into it and the directing. I mean, everything that all of the people did made the character of Ripley believable and honest, you know, and a person that you sit and you watch her on the screen, and it's like you're supporting her, you're fighting for her, you want her to win, and it was all believable, you know, what everything Ripley did was believable. And Prometheus, there was just nothing about any of these characters that was believable, nothing about these characters that made you give a shit about them. I just wanted most of them to just hurry the fuck up and die so they would shut up. Oh, it was terrible. Speaking of television, so let's segue into this. Now it's time to start talking about the state. Randy, did I forget anything in the intro? I got the email address. Oh, yes, in the email. If you do want to send us naked pictures, if you are physically attractive, male or female, transgendered, it doesn't matter. As long as you're physically attractive, if you want to send us naked pictures of yourself, please do so. We love that. Anything else that I forgot? I got date. I got we are stating the odd. I got cynical. Yep. All right, good. Oh, I forgot to mention that the theme song for Stating the Obvious is You Know I'm Right by David Gilmour. It's off his 1984 album, About Face. For those of you who live under a rock or listen to dubstep, David Gilmour is the guitar player for Pink Floyd, one of the greatest band ever in history, if you have to actually rank them. All right, what was I going to talk about? Oh, yes. That's not it. Here we go. I'm finding my notes. Talking about television. Spartacus. Just finished up the third season of Spartacus with the new guy playing the role of Spartacus, because the guy who played Spartacus before died, sadly. Took me about 2 episodes to get into it because I wasn't really sure how I felt about that. And just like the first Spartacus series, like the first episode of Spartacus Vengeance, the first one was Spartacus Blood and Sand, Then they had the prequel series, and then they had Spartacus Vengeance. When I watched Blood and Sand, the first episode was pretty terrible. I couldn't get into it. Fortunately, I stuck with it because the rest was awesome. Oddly enough, it was the same with Vengeance. Like, the first episode, I kind of, like, didn't give a shit about anything going on because it's like, what's... why? After that, it was good. So, it took two episodes to warm up to the new guy. Then it was okay. So, anyhow, Spartacus, Vengeance, fucking awesome. Final episode was, of course, a bloodbath. I think that Alethea is still alive. We're going to wait. We're going to see. But somebody... Alethea has to live because Alethea is totally fucking psycho and she's totally fucking hot. And I am totally in love with her. So, she has to be in the next series. Because she needs to be, because she's fucking hot and psycho. And she's a driving force. Because remember, conflict is the essence of drama. And that's why I love Spartacus, because there's so much conflict. But here's what's interesting. As I'm sitting here watching Spartacus, this is what's going through my mind. A lot of people are watching Spartacus. I mean, this is obvious because it's very popular, so a lot of people must be watching it. I know people who watch it. I know people who like it. And Spartacus is essentially about this man who says, I don't want to be a slave anymore. I want freedom. And I'm making an assumption here that many, I don't even want to say most, but I'm going to say there are some people watching Spartacus who sympathize with Spartacus and his cause, because that is sort of the driving force. I mean, Spartacus and his gang are the quote-unquote good guys. The Romans, the Roman Empire, are the bad guys. And usually, unless you're watching Prometheus, you sympathize with the good guys. When you're watching Prometheus, you sympathize with the fucking aliens, and you're hoping like hell the aliens, who are the bad guys, will hurry up and kill off all the good guys, because the good guys are really fucking annoying and you just want them to die, right? But typically, when you're watching a well-crafted movie or television series like Alien or Blade Runner or Spartacus, you sympathize with the good guys and you want the good guys to persevere. So Spartacus is this guy who is a slave and kills his slave masters and goes out and he's looking for freedom. And he wants freedom for everybody. And viewers watching Spartacus are on the side of the good guy, right? Which fascinates me, because the viewers of Spartacus are citizens of the United States who are themselves slaves of the United States. And in real life, if somebody like Spartacus appeared, these very same people who, you know, cheer him and support him and want him to win on this TV series, which, you know, is fantasy. It's fantasy, yes. But if this happened in real life, these same people would be just like the Roman citizens. They would be calling on the empire to find this man and crush him and kill him. I mean, look at the hatred in our society for Ron Paul. Now, I'm not trying to say Ron Paul is Spartacus, but I mean, Ron Paul is the closest our society right now today has to an equivalent of Spartacus. For those of you who don't know anything about history, Spartacus was a real person who actually led a slave revolt. It was not the first slave revolt in Rome, and details of exactly what happened are sketchy because there's not a lot of records. But the point is, there really was a guy called Spartacus who led a revolt of slaves against Rome, and he had to be hunted down and killed. All right. So, I mean, look at the hatred for Ron Paul when he just stood up and said, hey, what if, you know, we stop killing people in foreign countries, and what if we do something about the Federal Reserve, and what if, you know, we try to make the economy of this country better? I mean, look at the hatred for him. So it just fascinates me that the slaves in America watch Spartacus, and they're cheering for this guy who's fighting for freedom and self-determination, and at the same time, in real life, these people are just like the citizens of ancient Rome, who are past. They support the empire, they support the expansion of the empire, they support slavery, they support the murder of other people, they support the bread and the circuses, you know, like the presidential elections and all this other shit, and they're violently opposed to anybody who supports freedom. I mean, can you imagine? Think like today, what if somebody like Martin Luther King, like let's say today we still for some reason had slaves. I mean, if somebody like Martin Luther King showed up and said, "Hey, we should free the slaves." I mean, today the way people are so brainwashed by the state, I mean, he got shot already because he was dangerous to the government. But if Martin Luther King came up today, the government would not have to kill him. The government killed Martin Luther King Jr., by the way, in case you haven't figured that one out, because some private citizen would kill him, because people today are so fucking terrified of freedom. And so the point is, I found it so ironic that, you know, people are watching Spartacus and cheering for Spartacus to win, while in real life, these very same people, you know, you 99%ers out there, if Spartacus was a real person in the United States running around saying, "Hey, what if we were free from the state? What if you could get a job without permission from the government? What if you could enter into a contract without permission from the government? What if you could make money without having to give some of it to the government? What if the government didn't own your body? What if the government couldn't force you to do things? What if the government could not kill you for smoking marijuana? Well, what if you had actual freedom?" If somebody like that were alive right now today, publicly saying those things, the 99%ers out there would be screaming for this person to be murdered by the state. I just found it fascinating. I found it absolutely fascinating. Speaking of the state, let's go ahead and get these out of the way. Speaking of owning your body, so the Kansas government is trying to make a sperm donor pay child support. Now get this, okay, a Kansas man who donated sperm to a lesbian couple after answering an online ad is fighting the state's efforts to suddenly force him to pay child support for the now 3-year-old girl, arguing that he and the women signed an agreement waiving all of his parental rights. Now remember, those of you out there who are statist, you believe that you are not a slave, you believe that you are free, and you believe that you own your body. That's what you believe. That's why you fucking feminazis with this abortion shit are always going, "You can't tell me what to do with my body." Well, yes, the state can tell you what to do with your body, honey, because the state owns your body, and the state owns you. Now, let's take a look at what's going on here. The case hinges on the fact that no doctors were used for the artificial insemination. State argues that because William Morata, probably mispronouncing his name, did not work through a clinic or doctor as required by state law, he can be held responsible for $6,000 the child's biological mother received through public assistance as well as future child support. So here's what's going on. He answered a ad on Craigslist. These two women wanted to have a baby. They were seeking a sperm donor. So it says here, the three signed an agreement relieving Murata of any financial or paternal responsibility. So these three people, two lesbian women, this man, the women wanted to have a child. The three people, they found each other, they got together, they signed an agreement. All three of them willingly signed an agreement. They all agreed to this of their own free will, relieving Murata of financial or paternal responsibility. The government now says, "Oh no, you can't do that." Why? Because you don't own your bodies and you're not free. You can't make an agreement without the state being involved. Why must the state be involved? The argument on the state side is that you can't do this, you cannot engage in artificial insemination without a doctor being involved. Where is the relevant? So anyway, he dropped off containers of his sperm at the couple's home. He did not actually have sex with them, apparently. It says the women handled the artificial insemination themselves using a syringe. I'm sure if that turns you on. I mean, I'm not a lesbian. I would have just like had sex with the guy, but okay. I guess I could see why they might not want to do that, though. It's cool. The point is, they did it. They had their sperm donor. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. Hearing is set for Tuesday. Okay, I'm trying to get to the relevant point. Nobody has held him harmless. The agreement signed by Murata Schneider. I'm totally mutilating these people's names. And this is not intentional. The agreement signed by the man and the two women, saying that will prevent me from mutilating their names further, in March 2009, said the women, quote, hold him harmless, unquote, financially. The agreement also said the child's birth certificate would not list a father. Now, here's where we get to the state. Under a 1994 Kansas law, a sperm donor isn't considered the father only when a donor provides sperm to a licensed physician for artificial insemination of a woman who isn't the donor's wife. The result is an incentive for donors and prospective mother. The result is an incentive for donors and prospective mothers to work with a doctor, DeRosha said. Quote, I believe that is the intent of the law so that we don't end up with these ambiguous situations, unquote, she told the AP. Now, first of all, there's nothing about this situation which is ambiguous unless you're stupid. These three people came together. The two women wanted a baby. The man was willing to donate the sperm. They signed an agreement that said the man did not have any paternal or financial responsibilities. There's nothing here that's ambiguous unless you're really fucking stupid. Three people who are supposedly free, right? Because you slaves believe you're free. Three supposedly free people who own their own bodies made an agreement with each other. There's nothing here that is ambiguous unless you are stupid. It's not ambiguous. And it says here, the law says you have to go through a doctor. And she's saying so that we don't... No, the reason you have to go to a doctor is because the state needs to force as many people as possible into the medical industrial complex. Why do you need a doctor to get a woman pregnant? People have been getting pregnant for thousands and thousands of years without a doctor. Animals all around the world get pregnant without a doctor. You don't need a doctor to get pregnant. Why is there a law that says you have to go to a doctor to do this? Because you need to be forced into the medical industrial complex. The same reason Obamacare exists, to force you to buy health insurance, to force you to participate in the health insurance industrial complex. The same reason we have wars, to force people to be in the military, to force them to manufacture weapons, to force them to participate in the military-industrial complex. This is to force people to go to a doctor for something you don't need to go to a doctor for, so that you pay the doctor, so that the doctor has to pay taxes on that money you paid them, so that you generate more medical records about yourself, so that there's more information about you out there for the state to use against you. Okay, the reason you have to go to a doctor in order to get another person pregnant is because the state owns your body and the state owns their body. There is no fucking reason in a situation like this where you have two lesbian women who want a child and a man who is willing to donate the sperm to them. There is no fucking reason for a doctor to be involved if those people own their own bodies and if those people are free to legally engage in contracts with each other. But they don't, and they're not. And that's why all of this is happening. Also, the Kansas Supreme Court ruled in October 2007 that a sperm donor who works through a licensed physician can't legally be considered a child's father and doesn't have the right to visit the child or have a role in its upbringing, absent a written formal consent. But the case involving a sperm donor who was seeking access to the child had only an informal written agreement with the child's mother. Linda Elrod, a law professor and director of Washburn University's Children and Family Law Program, said the law seems clear. Sperm donors who don't want to be held liable for child support need to work with a doctor. other than that, the general rule is strict liability for sperm, said Elrod. And there you go. This is one of the reasons why, get ready to be pissed off, women are not equal to men. Because there is a strict liability for sperm, but there's no liability for eggs. If you're a woman and your egg gets inseminated, you can get an abortion, have that removed from you, and you are completely free of any financial obligations whatsoever. If you're a man and your sperm inseminates an egg, there's no way for you to get out of those financial obligations. None whatsoever. You are going to be held responsible for that shit. And this is why every time I hear women talking about how they want to be equal to men, I know they're full of shit. Because until men can get an abortion, just like a woman can, not an abortion as in killing the fetus, but an abortion to be able to just say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with this unviable tissue mass slash fetus slash child, whatever the fuck you want to call it, and be completely free of it just like that, then men and women are not equal. And I don't want to hear your fucking whining from all of you bitches out there. Meanwhile, how are we on time? Great. Let's do public education. Maryland school suspends 6-year-old boy for making gun gesture and saying pow. I don't need to read this. All you need to know is that a 6-year-old boy made the, quote, universal kid sign for a gun and said pow, and he got suspended from school. This is what is going on in our schools. This is what our schools are worried about. This is what's happening in schools in place of educating people. But then again, there are public schools. Let's talk about public schools and guns for a moment. I need to put a link. Randy, remind me to put a link to this video. Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller is on some TV show having a, well, I shouldn't say he's having a conversation. He's trying to have a conversation with these three ignorant bimbos, and I don't know who these bimbos are. Apparently, they're somebody that people know. Anyhow, the bimbos are raging on and on and on about gun control, and this is a follow-up to the Connecticut shooting, and also this is partially a chance for me to follow up on my comments about the Connecticut shooting and clarify and elaborate on some stuff. So anyhow, the video is just great because you see Penn attempting to have an intelligent conversation and these three bimbos just going berserk about, you know, how Asperger's has caused this kid to go violent and how nobody needs a gun and how the guns do their mind control thing and make people want to kill people and all this other shit. But Penn said the real, well, everything he said was intelligent, but he said one really important thing in this video. Penn pointed out that this incident is an anomaly. Because the thing that everybody loses sight of is that on the day when this wacko went in that school in Connecticut and shot those people, on that very same day, every other person in the United States did not go into a public school and shoot people. One person out of the entire population, and I right offhand don't know what the population of the United States is. I should have Googled that before I did this, just so I could use actual numbers to make my point. The point is, though, one person out of the entire population of the United States did something. And I'm just going to say it this way. This is not a tragedy. It's a tragedy. No, it's actually not. Look at all the people who did not get killed in a public school shooting. Look at all the people who did not commit a public school shooting. You know, it's kind of like that thing where, you know, if this is the worst problem you have in your life, then you're doing pretty fucking good. Out of all the people in the United States, out of all of you slaves out there, with all the people in this country that are on medication for their personalities, with all the people in this country that have psychological problems from being treated like shit by our society and by the state, out of all the people with anger and all this, the fact that only one person did this is actually pretty fucking amazing when you look at it statistically. This was one lone wacko nutcase. And when Penn said that it was an anomaly, he's exactly right. And then, of course, these wacko women were going on about how nobody needs an assault rifle and we got to get rid of them. And, you know, this ties into last episode, previous episode, whatever. I talked about the doctors in England who are calling for a ban on long-pointed kitchen knives because long-pointed kitchen knives cause violence. You know, I mean, no matter what you ban, no matter what you get rid of, no matter what you make illegal, no matter how you define an assault rifle, because all rifles can be used to assault people, all knives can be used to assault people, all baseball bats can be used to assault people, all finger pointing, making gun sounds can be used to assault people. You know, it doesn't matter what you ban, what you make illegal, there will always be nutcases in our society. There will always be anomalies. There will always be isolated acts of ridiculous violence like this. You know, one more fucking law is not going to fix it. I also want to say, speaking of that, when I was ranting about it shortly after it happened, I did talk about our violent society and movies and video games and stuff like that. And I just want to clarify, I am not saying that playing video games leads to violence or watching the violent movies leads to violence. What I am saying is that it's a compound effect. You know, because that's the thing, well, the guns made him do it. Or then there's the anti-video, well, the video games made him do it. You know, and well, Dungeons and Dragons made him do it, because we all know that people who play Dungeons and Dragons worship Satan. So, you know, everybody out there, you know, Asperger's made him do it. Everybody out there has got their one theory about the one thing that made him do it. Okay, my point is there isn't one thing that made him do it. What made him do it is a combination of things. It's the combination of 12 years of public school, along with being treated like a slave by the state, along with the way society behaves, along with the medication he was on to fuck up his personality, along with the idea in our society that violence is how you solve problems, which is broadcast to people through movies, through video games, through the war on drugs, through the war on terror, combined with the lack of personal boundaries and privacy, you know, which is illustrated by TSA touching children's penises in airports, and the government reading your email, and the corporations getting your information and using it to sell things. All of these things together, there's no one thing that made him go in there and shoot these kids in this school, which is what all of you out there would love to believe, because if there's one thing that causes this, you can just stop doing that one thing. We'll make that one thing illegal, and there'll never be another school shooting. And you believe this because you're stupid. Okay, there's not one thing that made this happen. There was a whole train of events that made this person, oh yeah, and as those of you who believe that he did this because his mother was a prepper. You know, no. He did this because of a whole chain of events in his life, situations, conditions that took place over the span of the moment he was conceived until the moment he walked in there and shot those kids. All of this came together to result in that. It's not one thing. And your idea that if you just find that one thing and make it illegal, there will never be another school shooting. Those of you who believe that, that simply shows how fucking stupid you are. Now, talking about fucking stupid, talking about corporations. We weren't talking about corporations, but we are now. And how stupid you people are. There is a company, corporation, around here. And I was talking to a person who works for that company. And this person is a left-wing statist. This person's a tree-hugger, an eco-wacko. This person is a global warming wacko, and this person was talking about how wonderful this company is. Now, this company spent, I know this for a fact, doesn't matter how I know this, but I know this. This company just had a holiday party. This company spent $175,000 on a five-hour party. That $175,000 included a $37,000 alcohol bill. I was there after the party was over, and I've worked on events in this facility in the past, and I can tell you that this event room was more trashed than I have ever seen it trashed. Somebody puked on the carpet, there was broken glass all over the floor, there was spilled alcohol all over the dance floor, and I was told that by people who were at the party who worked at the venue, I was told that there were people who were so drunk they were falling on the floor and couldn't get up. And this person also made an interesting comment. This person said, "Does anybody have hair on their vaginas anymore? Because all of these women were getting really drunk and falling down, and they were wearing short skirts and no underwear, and all of them, none of them had hair, had pubic hair." And I'm just like, interesting. So apparently this was the party to be at, and I totally missed it. I got there when it was over, and I wasn't able to take advantage of any of this. It's pretty sad. Anyhow, so that's the company I'm talking about. That's the sort of employees they have, and that's the sort of spending power they have, because, of course, we're in the greatest recession since the Great Depression, and so how could anybody, you know, drop $175,000 on a five-hour party? But, I mean, that's fine. It's that money went out. You know, the people made money off that. A lot of taxes were paid on that. The government loves that shit. Anyhow, so that's just that. This person who works for this company was telling me how wonderful it is to work there. This is a great place to work. She then told me that she's working 50-hour weeks, which, so apparently working a 50-hour work week is what makes a great company. And then she told me that they have all these deadlines that are just impossible to meet. Even if they worked more than 50 hours a week, they'd never be able to meet these deadlines. But this is a great company to work for. And here's the really interesting part, is that this company makes products that are made out of plastic, and the process in which this plastic is made is quote-unquote toxic and is illegal in the United States. So they have to have their plastic made in foreign countries where the environmental regulations will allow them to get away with it. But this is a great company to work for. And I find it fascinating that you statists can actually believe shit like this. A great company to work for is a company that has you working 50 hours a week on deadlines that can't be accomplished in 50 hours a week and manufactures a product that is manufactured by a toxic product, toxic process that is illegal in the United States, so you manufacture it in third world countries because, of course, they're third world countries and we can fucking pollute their countries. Who gives a shit? Because I'm a left-wing environmentalist wacko tree-hugging global warming left-wing statist. Awesome. Fucking awesome. You guys totally kick ass. All right, what do we want to do next? Let's talk about, on the subject of owning your body, let's go back to that for a minute. Justin Bieber, apparently a photographer was trying to take a picture of Justin Bieber, and he got killed or some shit. I'll link to this. I don't need no details. The point is, Justin Bieber now is pimping a law to make it illegal for people to act recklessly while trying to take pictures of entertainers. I mean, again, here we are. We're trying to make laws, by we, I mean Justin Bieber. Statist, you 99%ers. Oh, yeah. Let's see. On January the 1st, a Los Angeles photographer was killed when he was struck by a car while trying to photograph a person driving Bieber's auto. So this photographer, trying to get a picture of an idiot driving Bieber's automobile, you know, stood in the road or whatever, got hit by a car and died. No, Justin Bieber wants to make this illegal. He wants to make it illegal for people to engage in risky behavior while trying to take pictures of celebrities. Again, if you own your own body, you should be able to engage in risky behavior anytime you want. It's your body. You own it. So if you, for those of you who think you own your body, ask yourself, are you sure about that? Are you really sure you own your body? I'm going to read these last three lines here because these are interesting. The contradiction between the stars' simultaneous demands for privacy and for greater publicity for their entertainment careers has prompted much derision. In 2008, LA Police Chief William Bratton denounced a so-called, quote, Los Angeles Regional Paparazzi Task Force, unquote, as, quote, a total waste of time, unquote. Quote, we have sufficient laws on the books that we enforce to deal with these issues, he said in an interview with a news station. Quote, if the ones that attract the paparazzi behave in the first place, like we expect of anybody, that solves about 90% of the problem. The rest of it we can deal with. Unquote. It's hard to believe that a LA police chief would say anything that intelligent, but occasionally I guess things like that happen. Okay, the point is, when Justin Bieber can get the government, and who knows, it'll probably happen, to make a law that says you can't engage in risky behavior to take his picture. Why you'd want Justin Bieber's picture, I don't know, but whatever. I know some of you out there don't have a life, or maybe you just haven't discovered where you can get free porn on the net, youporn.com. Okay, instead of like fantasizing about Justin Bieber, go there and just look at some pornography. Do anything other, go, God, watch Prometheus and poke your eyes out, you know, with fucking hot irons from the pain of watching these stupid characters walking around doing things that have no motivation whatsoever. I don't know, whatever, just stop wanting pictures of Justin Bieber, and then people will stop doing ridiculous things to get pictures of Justin Bieber. I mean, this is the driving market forces. When people are willing to pay for, I mean, somebody's going to pay me thousands of dollars for a picture of Justin Bieber, you know, doing whatever the fuck Justin Bieber does. I mean, I would engage in risky behavior to get a picture of the little idiot too. Okay? What's next on this show? I don't have that information yet. Should I talk about this? Randy, where are we on time? How much time do I got? 10 minutes-ish. Ish. Did that. I don't want to talk about that yet. I have more to say about the United States military and what giant pussies they are. Handled that. Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and talk about this. Philosophy in the classroom. Get this out of the way. This will probably crop up again in the future, but this is something I've been needing to talk about for a while. I have taken a number of philosophy classes at different colleges because obviously philosophy is something that's interesting to me, should be interesting to you, but of course most of you don't understand what philosophy is. That's why you don't see contradictions, like when you run around saying, I own my body, but at the same time not being able to realize that you don't own your body because the state controls what you do with your body. And in all the philosophy classes I took, they ultimately lead down this path to looking for ethics, you know. And in that you have the utilitarian ethics, you have the Kantian ethics. And I've talked about a lot of this stuff in the past. If you go way back in the Stating the Obvious archives, you'll find an entire series I did on utilitarianism. And utilitarianism is essentially what drives our government. That just means that you do, that is democracy. You do what is quote-unquote good for the greatest number of people, which is another form of democracy, which is another form of mob rules, which is another way of saying that, you know, if 51% of the people want to put 49% of the people in concentration camps, you can do that because that's the greatest good for the majority. Utilitarianism doesn't work, yet still our government is based on that. You know, there's the kind of, so there's all these approaches, and in all these ethics classes that I've taken, there's always this attempt to distill right and wrong, or no, that's not a good way to say it. there's this constant look for some kind of rule or some kind of measure by which you can determine what is right and wrong. That's sort of the ultimate goal of ethics in a philosophical sense, is to come up with a framework that allows people to determine ethical right from ethical wrong, right? So utilitarianism says the framework in which you determine ethical right from ethical wrong, and from here on now I'm just going to call it right and wrong. Utilitarianism says the framework for determining right and wrong is what causes the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people. Kantian ethics say that the framework that determines right from wrong is, are you treating other people as an ends rather than a means? You know, and there are other variations on these things. Those are like the two big school of thoughts. But here's what I found fascinating, is that all throughout all the years and classes of ethics and philosophy that I've been through, I never, ever heard the non-aggression principle. It never came up that the framework for determining right and wrong is to ask the question, am I initiating force against another person? And it made me wonder, why is it that all these philosophy teachers with all these PhDs and all this experience, how is it that none of these people have ever brought up the non-aggression principle? How is it that I made it through all this college, all this philosophy, and never heard the non-aggression principle? There's all this rationalization. You know, Thomas Hobbes in The State, the Leviathan is the term that he coined, you know, for the state, where you go into the state and you give up some of your rights in order to be protected by the state and all this other stuff. And this is where statism comes from. And Thomas Hobbes came up with the social contract that a lot of people believe. You know, well, you're born in America, you're part of the social contract. Oh, you mean like how slaves born on the plantation were born into the system? Well, if I, being born in the United States, means that I'm part of the social contract now and that I have to obey the government of the United States, then doesn't that mean a slave born on a plantation is born into that social contract and has to keep being a slave? And so that's the point. It's like that's the very obvious contradiction in the Hobbesian social contract view. You know, when you look at utilitarianism, there's the very obvious contradiction that I've already pointed out. You know, 51% can enslave 49% because it's for the greater good. So there's all of these ethical framework philosophies out there that are trying to be the one philosophy that determines right from wrong, but they all fail. They all fail. Because what I've noticed, as I can look back on it now, from a position of more experience and more thinking about it, what I see when I look back on all of the ethics classes I've taken and all of the discussion in those ethics classes, is that the search for an ethical framework to determine right from wrong was not an honest one. It was not an unbiased one. Because all of these people looking for an ethical framework were looking for an ethical framework not that determined right from wrong. They were looking for an ethical framework that determined right from wrong in a way that the person looking for the framework wanted it to be. So, for example, if you believe that it's perfectly ethical and okay for the government to take people's property from them just because it's the government, then you have to have an ethical framework that says that's okay. There's all these people who are starting with the end, you know, well, I believe that the government should be able to have taxes, and I believe the government should be able to make drugs illegal, and I believe the government should be able to make war on other countries. So now I'm going to go and look for an ethical framework. Oh, but then I also believe that women have a right to abortion, and I believe that everybody has a right to health care. So now I have to go look for an ethical framework that supports those beliefs, and any ethical framework that doesn't support those beliefs that I already have, I have to dismiss that framework. And now that I can look back in retrospect, I can see that this is exactly what happened. You know, in pretty much every ethics book I read, there were elements of this, and certainly in the teachings of all the teachers, because all of the ethics professors, all of the professors, period, are all biased. And that's not to say anything bad about them. If you go back and you listen to old Stating the Obvious, you'll hear that I talk about one professor in particular, Professor Spears, who I took an intro class from. You know, and he is very much utilitarian, very much animal rights wacko. He made no attempt to really hide this. But he was still an excellent professor, because in something especially like philosophy or ethics, if the professor has a bias, they can be completely upfront about this and yet still very effectively teach a class. Because you can't, you know, who can teach an ethics class without having a bias towards one ethical system? That's pretty fucking, it's impossible. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But all of these ethics systems are built by reverse engineering, by starting with what the person trying to build it wants to arrive at and trying to go backwards. And that, I think, is why the non-aggression principle never came up. Because the non-aggression principle is pretty simple, it's easy to apply, it makes sense, and I will argue that it is ethically and morally correct. It's real simple. It is always wrong to initiate aggression or violence against another person. And because self-defense is not initiation, it is always right to defend yourself when aggression or violence or force is initiated against you first. And the problem with the non-aggression principle is that it makes wars wrong. It makes the war on drugs wrong. It makes taxation wrong. It makes all of the things the government does wrong. It makes it wrong to force people to buy health insurance. It makes it wrong to say to three people, you cannot enter into a contract to donate sperm without a doctor being involved and without the government being involved. It makes all of those things wrong. The non-aggression principle, if actually accepted as the basis of morality in the United States, would bring the entire statist system that you people support, like Roman citizens in the arena cheering the death of gladiators, it would bring all of that to a halt. It would bring it down. And this is why I believe in all the philosophy classes I took from 101 all the way up to 666 and everything in between, this is why the non-aggression principle is never mentioned, it's never brought up, it's never discussed, it's never analyzed. Because acceptance of the non-aggression principle would mean the absolute end of the state in all its forms. And you Roman citizens out there, you slaves aren't going to let that happen, because you enjoy slavery, you enjoy being wards of the state, you enjoy your bread and circuses. No matter how much you cheer for Spartacus, ultimately you are on the side of the empire.